ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Tammy Shipley believed someone was out to hurt her.
I thought someone was after me and I wanted to just be safe.
She's put under 24-hour surveillance.
I tried to get in contact multiple times.
I just need to make a phone call. Nobody knows where I am.
And then something strange happens.
She just drank and drank and had something like 20 litres of pure water.
Ambulance emergency.
I've got a woman unconscious.
Tammy's Story by Background Briefing. Sunday mornings at 9 on ABC Radio National and anytime on ABC Listen.
The Catholic Church has turned its attention to AI. This week, Pope Leo dropped a 42,300-word document calling for AI to be disarmed and warning of new digital slaveries. At an event where he was seated next to the co-founder of Anthropic, the company behind the Claude chatbot. So, with the Pope arguing AI must serve humanity rather than replace or control it, is the Vatican positioning itself as a moral counterweight to Silicon Valley? And could religion influence the future of technology? My name is Ray Johnston, and welcome to Download the Show on ABC Radio National. Now joining me to unpack some of the biggest stories in tech right now is Tegan Jones, a deputy editor of Smart Company and co-host of Weird Tech. Welcome back, Tegan.
Thank you for having me.
And Gianfranco Di Giovanni, games reporter at ABC Arts and content director at 102.5 ABC Perth. Gianni, welcome back.
Hi, how are you going?
Really well, thank you. Although Google is doing some things that haven't made me so happy. They've decided that the future of search is less 10 blue links and more here's an answer generated by a robot that can read the internet for you. Google is saying that this is the natural evolution of search, while anyone who remembers the phrase source checking is staring into the middle distance right now. So, Tegan, could you take us through what are the changes being made here exactly?
Google is changing search from keywords and a links engine and going more into the realm of a conversational AI assistant. So some of the new things that will roll out eventually are AI-generated summaries and conversational answers, which we're already seeing a little bit of, but more of that. Redesigned search bar built for longer, more natural questions. AI agents that will monitor the web on your behalf and come back to you as answers update. More integration in Gmail, photos, calendar and everything, and also more multimodal search using text, images, files and videos. So in a nutshell, it wants to keep you on platform and not send you to other websites.
So when exactly is this happening? You said it started already.
It's not going to happen straight away. Some of these more advanced features we're going to see more in the paid subscriptions, of course, at first, but we're probably going to see this over the next, 6 months, few years.
Oh, gosh. Okay, so this sounds like something I'm probably going to have to explain to my parents on how to use at some point. Gianni, what will a Google search look like with these changes? Is it going to be user-friendly?
Well, I think it is. I think I'm old enough to remember when Google first launched. And the whole advantage of Google back in the day when it was just a search engine was that you could actually put in normal sort of questions. Like I remember the old search engines like Alta Vista and Hotbot and all of those ones there. You had to like almost put in like a string of commands. And if you didn't do it exactly, it was no results whatsoever. And all the indexing and stuff was really basic as well. So this is sort of a step along that. But I think it really is just going to show that like the vast majority of search now has moved to these AI agents. And a lot of people, heaps of people in my life are basically saying, I've just gone to one of these AI agents for my search as a default because over a really long period of time, the commercial impacts of advertising and SEO optimization has effectively made search pretty useless. So they've kind of made the problem and are now also solving the problem as well, which is kind of funny to think about. But that's kind of what it's going to look like, going forward. It's going to look like those chat interfaces that we're kind of familiar with if you've ever used one of the other large language models.
I think we've all gotten used to seeing the AI summaries at the top and they've become a little bit more obtrusive, especially on mobile. You can't really avoid code the AI summary now. But Gianna, you mentioned people turning to chatbots and using those as search engines rather than the traditional search engines now. So is this just Google's way to compete with ChatGPT, etc.?
Yeah, basically, I think it is. Like, I think maybe the last time I was on the show, we were talking about that this is the way that people are searching for information these days. And it's going to be interesting to have a look at is the way that so many small businesses, so many websites, all of these things were effectively working towards fitting into Google's previous search algorithm, right? There were whole industries built on that optimization to try and get your stuff as visible as possible. We're all journalists. We've all thought about the ways that we can make our stories most interesting and most, you know, discoverable for people to find on the internet. So what this is going to do, as you said at the beginning, Google in particular wants you to stay on platform as much as possible. Mm. So they want your stuff to end up in there. But what's the incentive to keep making that if you're not going to get any advertising revenue if you work in a commercial media, or you're not even getting the eyeballs directly to justify the public spend of money to support journalism as well? So it becomes quite a complex sort of equation to think about, because it relies upon the work being done from all of these other sources, right? But if you're not getting anything in return, how do those sources keep being made? That's the big question, I think.
Yeah, there's a lot of questions around this. I think one of them as well is that we're told that we need to be double-checking everything that a large language model provides us. Anything that generative AI provides us, we need to check those links, we need to check the sources, make sure that it's not just pulling up a story from 10 years ago and saying it was last week. But we also know that people aren't really doing that. They're not really fact-checking. They're just kind of going ahead with what they've been shown. What happens, Tegan, to journalism if users stop clicking on links?
I mean, we're already seeing this problem happen already. And it's certainly one of the biggest concerns surrounding AI search, and that, to Gianni's point, a huge amount of web economy depends on traffic. And so journalism, reviews, affiliate businesses, so many websites are impacted by this. But AI is giving these users answers immediately. Fewer people are clicking through to the original source. But even before this, I felt like it was like pulling teeth trying to get people to check more than one source as it is. The New York Times, I think, had some research around this, that about allegedly 10% of those answers are wrong. I would colloquially actually say it's probably higher. Great example from my own life is that I am pregnant. I was, out of pure interest, decided to look up whether it's safe to have ibuprofen when you're pregnant. It's not. I knew that. And the AI summary was saying that it was. Oof. So that is a huge problem if there's going to be even less incentive to go and check other websites, or if Google makes it actively more difficult to click through to other websites to check sources.
Considering hallucinations are unavoidable with any generative AI, how dangerous could this be, Gianni?
I mean, very dangerous. This week, the Australian Curriculum and Assessment and Reporting Authority has done a big look at school students in particular, and they were looking at 10,000 students, and they found only 50% of year 6 students and 37% of year 10 students had adequate IT skills, right? So that means they're just looking at these things and thinking, oh, we'll just take it verbatim. Like, even though they use these devices all the time, we're hoping that kids, as they get younger, become more savvy, but it doesn't seem to be the case as much as it used to be. So it's one of those ones where I think there actually is a challenge and a real place for trusted sources. And what I think is quite fascinating, one of the original models for the internet was actually that it was going to be like an add-on to your phone bill, right? So you would pay to use websites, and then a bit of that website money would go to each of those stuff, much in the same way that we kind of use like Spotify or a music service, right? And if all of these large language models are going to be subscription-based, maybe there is a place that these large companies could potentially contribute and actually use them as a way to say, okay, we know that ABC, that a number of other outlets are actually trusted sources and do their work, and we can have that as a trusted source there and give them some revenue to do that.
But I mean, look how we saw that go before with Facebook and whatnot. I think that's always the big danger, is that if any business model, let's take journalism for example, a website is built on someone else's business model, which it kind of is with Google, certainly was with Facebook. We saw what happened with the 2010s, and a lot of websites were built very quickly around being popular on Facebook, and then the algorithm changes. Like, that's a huge problem, and we can't guarantee that they're going to pay to be able to scrape us all, but just, you know, go and charge someone else for it.
Yeah, shut the internet down. I think we've had enough.
Good call. Yeah.
Look, if we can't get it back to the way it was, we just don't want it anymore. That's the decision we've come to. Do we have any alternatives? Can we realistically turn away from Google search as the predominant option for finding things and finding information on the internet?
I mean, not really. There's people who are big fans of DuckDuckGo, you know, especially privacy conscious users, but it just doesn't have Google's scale or the infrastructure or even just that ecosystem that's been being built over decades in the same way. And I mean, what's the alternative? The chatbots themselves, like their own competitors, like what's better there? It all kind of seems a little bit samey to me.
What can we do, Gianni? Where do we go?
I told you, we're shutting down the internet. Everyone's going to listen to the radio from
joking.
Now on. I'm not joking. I like the radio. That's where I get all your information from there.
You are listening to Download This Show on ABC Radio National, where we're going to shut down the internet. I'm Ray Johnston, and I'm joined by Tegan Jones, Deputy Editor of Smart Company and co-host of Weird Tech, and Gianni, otherwise known as Gianfranco Di Giovanni, Games Reporter at ABC Arts and Content Director at 102.5 ABC Perth. And AI and religion, not necessarily a brand new pairing. Download This Show had a fascinating episode about the way AI is being used by churches and how AI chatbots are pretending to be Jesus. I'll pop a link to that in the show notes for you. But now the Pope is weighing in. Gianni, what has the Pope said about AI exactly?
Well, yes, has put out a papal encyclical, which is basically calling for robust legal frameworks, independent oversight and informed users, and a system of politics which doesn't abdicate that responsibility just to the tech companies. And so, yeah, it's almost like a state of the union for the Catholic Church in a way, to basically say these are the issues that are facing us and here's what we think. You know, here's your spiritual guidance and maybe our social guidance of how we should approach these problems that are facing the world.
I did hear it being bandied about on the internet that it's now a sin for Catholics to be using AI. Is that an accurate representation of what's happened here?
I think, like, you know, in anything, okay, years of Catholic school here, you know, in many things you'd have to sort of consider the way that it is being used, right? There are ways that things can be used for ill and there are ways that things that can be used for good. But these sort of large documents that get passed out and inspire the teaching at the local parish level is the sort of guidance from the top, really. So that's kind of guiding where people go.
So this feels like a big deal. Tegan, how significant is this?
You know, the Catholic Church does have a history of having an opinion, or one might even say historically intervening during major societal transformations. You know, even just things like industrialization and labor rights and nuclear weapons and climate change, like the Catholic Church has historically taken a stance on these sorts of things. So it is a big deal. I would even argue that considering some of the points that Pope Leo has been making around safety and governance and also jobs as well, is that you could argue that this could be a labor rights issue as well from the perspective of the Catholic Church.
Absolutely. And considering that this Pope chose the name Leo, deliberately linking himself to the Pope who wrote about workers' rights during the Industrial Revolution, this shouldn't really be a surprise, should it, Gianni?
No, I don't think so. I think it's Tegan was saying that, like, it is part of the teachings that come from the Catholic Church. And it's, yeah, I think it's interesting because where this is going to sit is, you know, different at different periods in time, right? So we know that some of these encyclicals, for example, have had big impacts. You know, the historical example is that there was one that was released called Pacem in Terris during the Cuban Missile Crisis in 1962. And that has been credited as influencing the president, John F. Kennedy at the time, to actually negotiate with the Soviets to sort of de-escalate the situation. But the biggest religion in Australia at the moment is no religion. Right? So that is the thing, is like, do these organizations hold the same sway that they used to hold in public and private life? I don't know. But it is interesting to see religious leaders of all types coming out and having these positions on these emerging technologies. It's a long way from bread and fishes, I think.
Yeah. What has the AI industry said about this, Tegan?
Some of them have been slightly receptive to the criticism. Most notably, one of the co-founders of Anthropic, Christopher Ola, did appear alongside the Pope and openly acknowledged that AI companies operate under intense commercial pressure and do need that outside scrutiny. We've certainly seen that over the last 3 to 4 years in particular, that commercial and just building at all costs seems to have taken precedence over things like jobs, copyright, ethics. So, you know, I do think it is notable that a co-founder of one of the biggest currently generative AI companies in the world is kind of standing by the Pope and going, yeah, probably. How much weight that will have, I guess we will see moving forward.
Look, the cynic in me thinks that it's a wonderful branding exercise.
Absolutely.
For Anthropic, being the AI organization that puts themselves forward as being the ethical one, being the moral one, being the people who broke off from OpenAI when they lost their way. They're all in bed with each other. It's really difficult to differentiate who's doing it properly or well.
Absolutely.
Gianni, I'd love to get your perspective. In 2026, there are still over a billion people that are members of the Catholic Church worldwide. Does the church have the power to move the needle on things like tech regulation? Can they push for change?
Like, it depends, right? And so, you know, some of the countries which have very strong and robust regulation systems are like Europe, which has been able to really shape a lot of the technology and software policy that we have. And so whether or not that does actually say to the politicians who are representing them, the ones who are making legislation, that, yeah, we need to actually start considering these things, or whether or not that sort of civil and, you know, private lobbying from other concerned rights groups and all of those sorts of things has an impact too. I can't exist in the world and not think that, looking at the way that we're kind of going with all of this technology and the acceleration that it's going, that it's going to sit how it's going to sit forever. There has to be some sort of change coming, because you talk to anyone and they're all saying, hey, something isn't quite right with the way that it's going. And whether or not that comes from the church or whether it comes from public participation in democracy and reporting and all that sort of stuff, I'm not 100% certain, but it feels like something is on the way, and that, you know, either we, you know, the robots take over and that's it and we're done, or we change and actually, you know, steer the ship back in a slightly different direction. It's a transformative technology, 100%, but we have to decide what transformation that looks like.
I would also say that, you know, it's probably worth also asking some questions around any large group, organization, church or otherwise, that is concerned about the concentration of power when they've historically had the concentration of power. Yeah. You know, I'm like, why are we so concerned here, folks? Is it because we're losing out here a little bit?
Oh, interesting perspective there. You are listening to Download This Show on ABC Radio National. Ray Johnston here with you. And I'm joined by Gianfranco Di Giovanni, who is a games reporter at ABC Arts and content director at 102.5 ABC Perth. And also Tegan Jones, deputy editor of Smart Company and co-host of Weird Tech. And if you're trying to avoid people knowing you're wearing smart glasses, I have the product for you, folks. Smart contact lenses are apparently, allegedly, on the horizon. Gianni, what problem are smart contact lenses actually solving?
Well, I guess the whole idea between smart glasses and Google Glass when they were first originally came out was to kind of augment our reality. I know that's a bit of a cliche to say, but to add information to our world, right? Who wouldn't love to be at a conference and someone walks up to you and goes, "G'day, Gianni. G'day, Ray. How are you?" And you blank on their name and have their name appear next to it, and you can just say hello. Like, that sort of stuff I think is really cool. And that is the hope for these smart contact lenses, that you will have a layer of information that's applied to your world as you just move through it. So very sci-fi.
I think that sounds very cool until I think about that there would have to be a database of all of our faces being kept somewhere with our names attached to it so that we can be identified through these lenses.
Yeah, I hate everything about this.
Unfortunately for the three of us, I think our faces and names are all over the internet, so we're probably...
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Tegan, we often see products like this pushing accessibility and medical use. It almost feels like guilt tripping at a certain point. It's like there are people in our community who will genuinely benefit from the vast majority of technologies that are being developed. And at the same time, it seems to come with a surveillance and security cost. But I'm curious, could accessibility make this a mainstream product?
Absolutely. This will be the crux of it for sure. I mean, it's really easy for people to reject something like ads in your eyeballs, but they'll be more willing to accept a lens that helps, you know, someone see or detect glaucoma early. Like, you're just going to seem like a jerk if you're against that. So I mean, I see it as being the gateway for sure. And look, to be fair, while I do hate this, like, yes, it has some amazing potential, like glaucoma detection and glucose monitoring and accessibility in general and health tracking. Those are all fantastic things. But I just don't trust the tech industry enough, and I've seen too much to believe that that will be the only thing.
Also, I think about the backlash towards smart glasses. So, you know, there have been questions raised about the brand damage that may have occurred to Ray-Ban and Oakley based on Meta's smart glasses and the perceptions of who is wearing them based on the kind of content that has been released on the internet. A lot of non-consensual filming of people for social media platforms has been going on. Would we be more willing to accept invisible tech like this than smart glasses, or is it just a case that we can't see it, so we're naturally accepting it, Gianni?
Oh, God, I don't know whether or not we'd be willing to accept it. I've said three times on this show that I'd like to shut the internet down. But
look, on Download This Show, we do enjoy technology, I promise you.
We do enjoy it. Yeah, look, I think there is going to be, in much of the way that any of these things have happened, we need to really think about what are the consequences of these things before we introduce them, right? Mm. Like, next time do we go to a concert, do we have it that you walk through a gate and then all of a sudden your eyes stop working in a certain way or whatever it is? Like, how do we control that sort of thing?
How do we
control when, say, for example, someone has something hidden on them and they are recording someone in an intimate situation and that information gets distributed somewhere else, right? So there are a whole bunch of considerations we have to have about how this technology works. And as sort of dorky as the glasses look, at least they're kind of obvious and people can tell when they're on, right? And so you can say, hey, look, I'm not happy with this, and you can just leave or whatever it is, right? When it starts to become more invisible, when it starts to become the difficulty for someone external to determine whether or not these technologies exist, that I think is something we really need to grapple with.
I don't think the benefits to humanity, to the tech industry, to people are going to outweigh the multiple ways that we would need to set up society in order to make this safe. So if these were to exist in large numbers in the mainstream, I can't see it being a positive thing, which makes me sad because I do like people making fun, cool new things that aren't just the same kind of gadgets that we're seeing over and over again. So Tegan, what would these contact lenses need to be able to do for you to want to wear them?
Like nothing, basically. You know,
It's a hard no from Tegan.
Look, I already have trouble with someone else trying to do my eye makeup. That's how sensitive my eyes are, let alone shoving something into my eyeball. So from a logistic perspective, absolutely not. But to be fair, I don't need glasses or contact lenses yet. So I'm coming at this with a very privileged lived experience. I can still understand why these might be great, but I'm not living, you know, with the need for them. So I can only speak as a tech reporter who hates how normalized tracking and surveillance has become. So for me, that's enough reason to say no, while still respecting why many people might say yes.
Gianni, would you wear these? Is there anything they could do that would make you want to put them on?
I tell you what, if it could stop me from double booking myself, I'd love that. Don't say yes to this thing because you've literally got another appointment in your calendar. That's my hope for
things. Look at your calendar.
Yeah, look.
Your calendar does that.
It's never helped me since then.
So you need contact lenses that just say, look at your calendar on the inside of them.
I need a system, really, is what I actually need, someone to manage my calendar. Look, I wear glasses and I like the idea of that. I kind of think that there, in many of these things, there could be a good contextual place where these things could exist. Like in work environments, that would be really cool. I could have these little things pop up and say, give me some information as I'm doing my job. That could be really cool. Driving around on the bike or walking or whatever, that would be quite cool. I like the idea of exercising with it and showing your vitals on that sort of thing. I think that's a cool idea. But whether or not this becomes a pervasive technology, I think we're still a fair way off before we get to that point. But I think, yeah, I'm not going to be an early adopter on this. I'm going to wait until a few people fry their eyeballs or whatever with these things before I give it a red hot go.
Mark my words, you'll be watching ads before any of those like wonderful things happen in your eyeballs.
Yeah.
You need to stop giving them ideas, Tegan.
I know. Don't build the torment nexus.
All right. So on Download This Show, we do love technology, so we love to hear about the tech that has brought you joy this week. Gianni, what have you got for me?
Can I tell you, I bought a very cheap pair of wired headphones.
Oh, gosh.
I literally just plugged them into my phone. They cost me under $30. And I'm like, wow, this is really good. And the microphone quality is really good. I have expensive headphones. I work in audio and I just bought these cheap ones and they're very good. So yeah, I recommend a wired headphone if you're thinking about doing something because they're still pretty good.
What led you to buy the wired headphones?
The kids are doing it. The kids are all doing it.
I wanted to relive my iPod era with the white cable and everything. I actually lost some small earbud wireless ones at the pub and I have been resisting the urge to get new ones for a really long time. And then I was like, oh, I actually do need to sometimes walk around and have phone calls with people. So that is the reason why I bought those instead. So.
Congratulations, you have joined a growing movement of people that are investing in wired headphones. Sales of them have gone through the roof apparently, so welcome. Tegan, tell me about the tech that brought you joy this week.
This is out of sheer paranoia. As I mentioned, I am pregnant, so having to navigate the murky waters of what goes online when I give birth to this child, I am very against putting anything about my kid online, photos, all of that. But I also have a lot of well-meaning relatives that I am very paranoid will put a bunch of stuff on their Facebooks and I don't know who they follow. Then there's the whole AI element. So I've been introduced to a couple of app options where I can just put photos of the baby into it and then share it with trusted friends and family. And hopefully it goes no further than that.
Hopefully. Fingers crossed.
Yeah.
It is good to know that apps like that do exist out there for people that do want that option. You know, the promise of the internet and the promise of social media was to be able to connect with our friends and family on that level. So to have a dedicated app for it is very good news.
Yeah.
Well, thank you both so much for joining me for this week's episode of Download This Show. Gianni, where can people find you and your work?
ABC Arts is probably the best place to see my writing, or you can listen to me on the radio on Mondays on the ABC Listen app. I actually have a segment called Tech Daddy where the boomers love it. Where people call up and ask about problems with their iPads and their email and all that sort of stuff. So yeah, I'm at the coal face of technical support, my friends.
I'm definitely tuning in to Tech Daddy. Thank you, Gianni. And Tegan Jones, where can people find you and your work?
You can find me at Tech Mummy. No, you can find my writing over at Smart Company. And also Weird Tech you can find on the iHeart Network or anywhere that you get your podcasts.
Wonderful. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And now some more tech news from the week that was. In case you missed it, Uber's chief operating officer has revealed the challenge Uber faces, justifying the company's mammoth AI usage, given the usefulness of what's actually being created. Speaking with the Rapid Response podcast, Andrew McDonald was quoted saying, "If you're not actually able to draw a direct line to how much useful features and functionality you're shipping to your users, that trade becomes harder to justify." Uber burned through its entire 2026 AI budget by April this year. Australian businesses are among the most likely to pay a ransom to retrieve or protect stolen information, more than half admitting that they have given money to online criminals. Cybersecurity firm Veeam released the findings from a global study on Thursday, which also found almost 2 in 3 Australian companies expected to be attacked online within the year. And bucking a growing trend from university students booing visiting speakers when they mention AI, Apple co-founder Steve Wozniak earned applause instead. During his speech, Wozniak offered reassurance to new graduates entering the workforce, saying, "You have AI. Actual intelligence." And that's all for Download This Show this week. Be sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and send us an email. downloadthisshow@abc.net.au. I do read all of your emails. I'm sorry I can't get back to all of them, but I will try my hardest. You can always also slide into my DMs on Instagram at Ray Johnston. I am Ray Johnston, and you've been listening to Download This Show on ABC Radio National.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.